Welcome to Astounding Stories of Space and Time. I'm Mardell, reading Storm Over Warlock by Andre Norton. Chapter 4, Sortie. 5 days later, they came up from the south, so that this time Shan's view of the Terran camp was from a different angle. At first sight, there had been little change in the general scene. He wondered if the aliens were using the Terran dome shelters themselves. Even in the twilight, it was easy to pick out such landmarks as the comm dome, with the shaft of a broadcaster spearing from its top, and the greater bulk of the supply warehouse. Two of their small flyers down on the landing field. Thorvald materialized from the shadow, his voice a thread of whisper. By Shan's side, the Wolverines were moving restlessly. Since Taggy's attack on the Throg, neither beast would venture near any site where they could scent the aliens. This was the nearest point to which the men could urge either animal, which was a disappointment, for the Wolverines would have been an excellent addition to the surprise sortie they planned for tonight, halving the danger for the men. Shan ran his fingers across the coarse fur on the animal's shoulders, exerting a light pressure to signal them to wait. But he was not sure of their obedience. The foray was a crazy idea, and Shan wondered again why he had agreed to it. Yet he had gone along with Thorvald, even suggested a few modifications and additions of his own, such as the contents of the crude leaf sack now resting between his knees. Thorvald flitted away, seeking his own post to the west. Shan was still waiting for the other's signal when there arose from the camp a sound to chill the flesh of any listener, a wail which could not have come from the throat of any normal living thing, intelligent being or animal. Ululating in its ear-torturing intensity, the cry sank to a faint, ominous echo of itself, to waver up the scale again. The Wolverines went mad. Shan had witnessed their quick kills in the wilds, but this stark ferocity of spitting, howling rage was new. They answered that challenge from the camp, streaking out from under his hands. Yet both animals skidded to a stop before they passed the first dome and were lost in the gloom. A spark glowed for an instant to his right. Thorvald was ready to go, so Shan had no time to try and recall the animals. He fumbled for those balls of soaked moss in his leaf bag. The chemical smell from them blotted out the alien mustiness which the wind brought from the campsite. Shan readied the first sopping mess in his sling, snapped his fire sparker at it, and had the ball awhirl for a toss, almost in one continuous movement. The moss burst into fire as it curved out and fell. To a witness, it might have seemed that the missile materialized out of the air, the effect being better than Shan had hoped. A second ball for the sling. Spark, out, down. The first had smashed on the ground near the dome of the comm station, the force of the impact flattening it into a round splatter of now fiercely burning material, and his second, carefully aimed, lit 2 feet beyond. Another wail, tearing at the nerves. Shan made a third throw, a fourth. He had an audience now, and the light of those pools of fire. The Throgs were scuttling back and forth, their hunched bodies casting weird shadows on the dome walls. They were making efforts to douse the fires, but Shan knew from careful experimentation that once ignited, the stuffy as skim from the lip of one of the hot springs would go on burning as long as a fraction of its viscid substance remained unconsumed. Now Thorvald had gone into action. A Throg suddenly halted, struggled frantically, and toppled over into the edge of a fire splotch. Legs looped together by the coils of the curious weapon Thorvald had put together on their first night of partnership. Three round stones of comparable weight had each been fastened at the end of a vine cord, and those cords united at a center point. Thorvald had demonstrated the effectiveness of his creation by bringing down one of the small deer of the grasslands, an animal normally fleet enough to feel safe from both human and animal pursuit, and those weighted ropes now trapped the Throg with the same efficiency. Having shot his last fireball, Shan ran swiftly to take up a new position, downgrade and to the east of the domes. Here he put into action another of the primitive weapons Thorvald had devised, a spear hurled with a throwing stick, giving it double range and twice as forceful penetration power. The spears themselves were hardly more than crudely shaped lengths of wood, their points charred in the fire. Perhaps these missiles could neither kill nor seriously wound, but more than one thudded home in a satisfactory fashion against the curving back carapace or the softer front parts of a Throg in a manner which certainly shook up and bruised the target. And one of Shan's victims went to the ground to lie kicking in a way which suggested he had been more than just bruised. Fireballs, spears, Thorvald had moved too, and now down into a somewhat frantic melee of the aroused camp, fell a shower of slim weighted reeds, each provided with a clay ball head. The majority of those balls broke on landing, as the Terrans had intended. So through the beetle smell of the aliens spread the acrid, throat-parching fumes of the hot spring water. Whether those fumes had the same effect upon Throg breathing apparatus as they did upon Terran, the attackers could not tell, but they hoped such a bombardment would add to the general confusion. Shan began to space the hurling of his crude spears with more care, trying to place them with all the precision of aim he could muster. There was a limit to their amount of varied ammunition, although they had dedicated every waking moment of the past few days to manufacture and testing. Luckily, the enemy had had none of their energy beams at the domes, and so far they had made no move to lift their flyers for retaliation blasts. But the Throgs were pulling themselves into order. Blaster fire cut the dusk. Most of the aliens were now flat on the ground, sending a creeping line of fire into the perimeter of the camp area. A dark form moved between Shan and the nearest patch of burning moss. The Terran raised a spear to the ready before he caught a whiff of the pungent scent emitted by a wolverine hot with battle rage. He whistled coaxingly. With the Throgs eager to blast any moving thing, the animals were in danger if they prowled about the scene. That blunt head moved. Shan caught the glint of eyes in a furred mask. It was either Taggy or his mate. Then a puff of mixed Throg and chemical scent from the camp must have reached the wolverine. The animal coughed and fled westward, passing Shan. Had Thorvald had time and opportunity to make his planned raid on the supply dome? Time during such an embroilment was hard to measure, and Shand could not be sure. He began to count aloud slowly, as they had agreed. When he reached 100, he would begin his retreat. On 200, he was ready to run for it, his goal the river, a half mile from the camp. The stream would take the fugitives to the sea, where fjords cut the coastline into a ragged fringe, offering a wealth of hiding places. Throgs seldom explored any territory on foot. For them to venture into that maze would be putting themselves at the mercy of the Terrans they hunted, and their flyers could comb there above such a rocky wilderness without result. Shan reached the count of 100. Twice, a blaster bolt singed ground within distance, close enough to make him wince, but most of the fire carried well above his head. All of his spears were gone, save for one he had kept, hoping for a last good target. One of the Throgs, who appeared to be directing the fire of the others, was facing Shan's position. And on pure chance that he might knock out that leader, Shan chose him for his victim. The Terran had no illusions concerning his own marksmanship. The most he could hope for, he thought, was to have the primitive weapon thud home painfully on the other's armored hide. Perhaps, if he were very lucky, he could knock the other from his clawed feet. But that chance which hovers over any battlefield turned in Shan's favor. At just the right moment, the Throg stretched his head up from the usual hunched position where the carapace extended over his wide shoulders to protect one of the alien's few vulnerable spots, the soft underside of his throat. And the fire-sharpened point of the spear went deep. Throgs were mute, or at least none of them had ever uttered a vocal sound to be reported by Terrans. This one did not cry out, but he staggered forward, forelimbs up, clawed digits pulling at the wooden pin, transfixing his throat just under the mandible-equipped jaw, holding his head at an unnatural angle. Without seeming to notice the others of his kind, the Throg came on at a shambling run, straight at Shan as if he could actually see through the dark and had marked down the Terran for personal vengeance. There was something so uncanny about that forward dash that Shan retreated. As his hand groped for the knife at his belt, his boot heel caught in a tangle of weed, and he struggled for balance. The wounded Throg, still pulling at the spear shaft protruding above the swelling barrel of his chest, pounded on. Shan sprawled backward and was caught in the elastic embrace of a bush, so he did not strike the ground. He fought the grip of the prickly branches and kicked again solid earth under his feet. Then again he heard that piercing wail from the camp, as chilling as it had been the first time. Spurred by that, he won free. But he could not turn his back on the wounded Throg, keeping rather a sidewise retreat. Already the alien had reached the dark beyond the rim of the camp. His progress now was marked by the crashing through the low brush. Two of the Throgs, back on the firing line, started up after their leader. Shan caught a whiff of their odor as the wounded alien advanced, with the single-mindedness of a robot. It would be best to head for the river. Tall grass twisted about the Terran's legs as he began to run. In spite of the gloom, he hesitated to cross that open space. At night, Warlock's peculiar vegetation displayed a very alien attribute. 10-20 varieties of grass, plant, and tree emitted a wan phosphorescence, varying in degree, but affording each an aura of light. And the path before Shan was now dotted by splotches of that radiance, not as brilliant as the chemical-borne flames the attackers had kindled in the camp, but as quick to betray the unwary who passed within their dim circles. And there had never been any reason to believe that Throg powers of sight were less than human. There was, perhaps, some evidence to the contrary. Shan crouched, charting the clumps ahead for a zigzag course, which would take him to at least momentary safety in the riverbed. Perhaps a mile downstream was the transport the Terrans had cobbled together no earlier than this afternoon, a raft Thorvald had professed to believe would support them to the sea, which lay some 50 Terran miles to the west. But now, he had to cover that mile. The wolverines, Thorvald, there was one lure which might draw the animals on to the rendezvous. Taggy had brought down a deer just before they had left the raft, and instead of allowing both beasts to feast at leisure, Shan had lashed the carcass to the shaky platform of wood and brush, putting it out to swing in the current, though still moored to the bank. Wolverines always cached that part of the kill which they did not consume at the first eating, usually burying it. He had hoped to leave the carcass in such a way that would draw the animals back to the raft when they were hungry, and they had not fed particularly well that day. Thorvald, well, the survey officer had made it very plain during the past 5 days of what Shan had come to look upon as an uneasy partnership that he considered himself far abler to manage in the field, while he had grave doubts of Shan's efficiency in the direction of survival potential. The Terran started along the pattern of retreat he had laid out to the river bed. His heart pounded as he ran, not because of the physical effort he was expending, but because again from the camp had come that blood-freezing howl. A lighter line marked the lip of the cut in which the stream was set. Something he had not foreseen, he threw himself down to crawl the last few feet, hugging the earth. That very pale luminescence was easily accounted for by what lay below. Shan licked his lips and tasted the sting of sap smeared on his face during his struggle with the bushes, while the strip of meadow behind him now had been spotted with light plants. The cut below showed an almost solid line of them, stringing willow-wise along the water's edge. To go down at this point was simply to spotlight his presence for any Throg on his trail. He could only continue along the upper bank, hoping to finally find an end to the growth of luminescent vegetation below. Shan was perhaps 5 yards from the point where he had come to the river, when a commotion behind him made him freeze and turn his head cautiously. The camp was half hidden, and the fires there must be dying, but a twisting, struggling mass was rolling across the meadow in his general direction. Thorvald fighting off an attack? The wolverines? Shan drew his legs under him, ready to erupt into a counter-offensive. He hesitated between drawing stunner or knife. In his brush with the injured Throg at the wreck, the stunner had had little impression on the enemy. And now he wondered if his blade, though it was super steel at its toughest, could pierce any joint in the armored bodies of the aliens. There was surely a fight in progress. The whole crazily weaving blot collapsed and rolled down upon the three bright light plants. Dull sheen of Throg casing was revealed. No sign of fur, or flesh, or clothing. Two of the aliens battling? But how? Why? One of those figures got up stiffly, bent over the huddle, still on the ground, and pulled at something. The wooden shaft of Shan's spear was wanly visible, and the form on the ground did not stir as that was jerked loose. The Throg leader dead? Shan hoped so. He slid his knife back into the sheath, tapped the hilt to make sure it was firmly in place, and crawled on. The river, twisting here and there, was a promising pool of dusky shadow ahead. The bank of willow things was coming to an end, and none too soon, for when he glanced back again, he saw another Throg run across the meadow, and he watched them lift their fellow, carrying him back to camp. The Throgs might seem indestructible, but he had put an end to one, aided by luck and a very rough weapon. With that to bolster his self-confidence to a higher notch, Shan dropped by cautious degrees over the bank and down to the water's edge. When his boots splashed onto the oily flood, he began to tramp downstream, feeling the pull of the water, first ankle high and then about his calves. This early in the season, they did not have to fear floods, and hereabouts the stream was wide and shallow, save in mid-current at the center point. Twice more he had to skirt patches of light plants, and once a young tree stood bathed in radiance with a pinkish tinge instead of the usual ghostly gray. Within the haze which tinted the drooping branches flitted small, glittering, flying things, and the scent of its half-open buds was heavy on the air, neither pleasant nor unpleasant in Shan's nostrils, merely different. He dared to whistle, a soft call he hoped would carry along the cut between the high banks. But though he paused and listened, until it seemed that every cell in his thin body was occupied in that act, he heard no answering call from the wolverines, nor any suggestion that either the animals or Thorvald were headed in the direction of the raft. What was he going to do if none of the others joined him downstream? Thorvald had said not to linger there in daylight, yet Shan knew that unless he actually sighted a Throg patrol splashing after him, he would wait until he made sure of the other's fate. Both Taggy and Togi were as important to him as the survey officer, perhaps more so, he told himself now, because he understood them to a certain degree and found companionship in their undemanding company, which he could not claim from the man. Why did Thorvald insist upon their going on to the seashore? To Shan's mind, his own first plan of holing up back in the eastern mountains was better. Those heights had as many hiding places as the fjord country. But Thorvald had suddenly become so set on this westward trek that he had given in. As much as he inwardly rebelled when he took them, he found himself obeying the older man's orders. It was only when he was alone as now that he began to question both Thorvald's motives and his authority. Three sprigs of a light bush set in a triangle. Shan paused and then climbed out on the bank, shaking the water from his boots as Taggy might shake such drops from a furred limb. This was the sign they had set to mark their rendezvous point, but... Shan whirled, drawing his stunner. The raft was a dark blob on the surface of the water, some feet farther on, and now it was bobbing up and down violently. This was not the result of any normal tug of current. He heard an indignant squeal and relaxed with a little laugh. He need not have worried about the wolverines. That bait had drawn them all right. Both of them were now engaged in eating, though they had to conduct their feast on the rather shaky foundation of the makeshift transport. They paid no attention as he waded out, pulling at the anchor cord as he went. The wind must have carried his familiar scent to them. As the water climbed to his shoulders, Shan put one hand on the outmost log of the raft. One of the animals snarled a warning at being disturbed. Or had that been at him? Shan stood where he was, listening intently. Yes, there was a splashing sound from upstream. Whoever followed his own recent trail was taking no care to keep that pursuit a secret, and the pace of the newcomer was fast enough to spell trouble. Throgs? Tensely the Terran waited for some reaction from the wolverines. He was sure that if the aliens had followed him, both animals would give warning, save when they had gone wild upon hearing that strange wail from the camp. They avoided meeting the enemy. But from all sounds, the animals had not stopped feeding. So the other was no beetlehead. On the other hand, why would Thorvald so advertise his coming, unless the need for speed was greater than caution? Chandru taut the mooring cord, and bringing out his knife to saw through that tough length, a figure past the three-sprig signal ran onto the raft.
"Andy?"
The call came in a hoarse, demanding whisper.
"Here, cut loose. We have to get out of here."
Thorvald flung himself forward, and together the men scrambled up on the raft. The mangled carcass plunged into the water, dislodged by their efforts. But before the wolverines could follow it, the mooring vine snapped, and the river current took them. Feeling the raft sway and begin to spin, the wolverines whined, crouched in the middle of what now seemed a very frail craft. Behind them, far away, but too clear, sounded that eerie howling, topping the sigh of the night wind.
"I saw,"
Thorvald gasped, pausing as if to catch full lungfuls of air to back his words.
"They have a hound. That's what you hear."
Please join me next time for another exciting chapter of Storm Over Warlock, by Andre Norton, here on Astounding Stories of Space and Time. Until then, watch the skies. Thank you.